Hit well to center field. Santana goes back, turns, and it's gone. Ryan O'Hearn with a laser beam home run to straightaway center field, and the Royals have regained the lead.
Royals took the lead. There were all kinds of lead changes last night, but at the end, this was the game-winning hit for the Red Sox.
Swings and rips that one down the line. That'll settle on the warning track. One run is in. Verdugo rounding. Here's the play. He slides in safely. J.D. Martinez down the line, and the Sox are back in front 7-6.
And the Royals lose their seventh in a row. 7-6 was the final. Seven lead changes in the game. Ryan O'Hearn, Michael A. Taylor each had three hits. You heard O'Hearn's home run. They combined for five RBIs. Whit Merrifield continues to hit the ball well. Hunter Dozier had a couple of doubles. Breakout, Hunter Dozier. But Brad Keller continues to, I'm coming up with the word flounder because that's just a different word that I suddenly like because I really think it describes the Royals very well right now. Brad Keller last night went five innings plus, 10 hits, six runs, five walks, no strikeouts. Royals record 33-45. They lost seven in a row. They're back in action tonight at 6:10 against the Red Sox. Mike Minor on the hill, record of 6-5, ERA north of 5.12. And guess what last night? Brad Keller made history. Not in a good way. Brad Keller allowed 10 hits and five walks without striking out a single batter. He's only the fourth pitcher this century to allow 10 or more hits, five or more walks, and not strike out a single dude. Jacob Turner in 2013, Lenny DiNardo, who can forget him, in 2009, and Jeff Supon, remember him with the Royals, back in 2002. Mike Matheny on Keller's continued struggles.
You know, I know Brad was having difficulty holding on the ball at times. I ended up leading into some strange walks after he was pretty efficient. But overall, he came out aggressive and attacking the zone exactly like he wanted. It wasn't necessarily in the bottom of the zone, but he was still in a lot of strikes with the slider and with the fastball. Had trouble getting it down, and it was a humid night. It was hard to keep the sweat from pouring on his head. Then he seemed to get a little bit better later on, and just couldn't catch up once we gave up that last lead.
Okay, so what do you do?
I don't know. I told some people last night it's getting pretty close to DFA time for Brad Keller if he's not going to figure this out. Because you can't send him anywhere.
Like, you hate to give up on the guy
who
was your opening day starter last couple of years.
I know.
I think he's got to go to the bullpen.
I
think he's
I mean, that's the only place you can send him.
DFA, I mean, that seems extreme. I think you've got...
There's guys that were better than him that have gotten it. I don't know. It's...
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to...
Try the bullpen, obviously.
You have
obviously.
To try the bullpen. To me, before you DFA him, you got to send him to the bullpen and see if he can figure something out. Because right now, he can't figure it out. And I don't know if it's mental, because we've seen him have good stuff before. But now he's not even striking people out. And if he isn't striking people out, he's got no chance. Because that's one of the things that made him good there for a couple of years, was that he had ace stuff. And aces have strikeout stuff. And that's alarming that he walked five and didn't strike out anybody. Forget the fact he gave up 10 hits. I know it's a bandbox at Fenway. But, you know, I sit here and I look at Jacob Junis. He had options. He's in the minors right now. And honestly, he's pitched better than Brad Keller this year.
Yeah.
And he got demoted because they brought Daniel Lynch up, which was, you know, bad decision. I still think that decision turned the Royals season. I still do not, for the life of me, understand what the Royals were doing at that point in time. And they messed up not only one pitcher, but two pitchers. Junis, who had been pitching well, and they messed up Lynch. And they went promptly on an 11-game losing streak when they called up Lynch, or 10 after they lost the first game when he wasn't quite up yet. And Jackson Cower they brought up. It was a very quick cup of tea. He didn't do very well. And you start to sit here and you're saying, you know, the Royals got all these prospects, and they've got lots of young talent. And we say the future is bright. And Bobby Witt Jr. looks exciting, and they've got, you know, Nick Prado down there, might be the first baseman of the future. And you got pitchers like Cower, and you got Lacy, and you got Lynch still, even though those two didn't do well when they come up. You know, Singer could hopefully be a part of the rotation for years to come. And you're sitting here and you're looking at this rotation, you're going, well, we got Keller, he's only 25, 26. We've got Singer. Yeah, we're definitely going to be able to fill in around him. You know, we got Minor and Duffy. They ain't going to be here probably 2 or 3 years from now, but they're filling a gap for us. But right now, the Royals, quite honestly, have no starting pitching. They have, I mean, what starting pitching do they have? I mean, if Danny Duffy doesn't pitch well, which he's just now off the injured list, who do they have? Can you help me? Mike Minor's been good at times. His ERA's over 5. Mm-hmm. We know, you know, Singer's been very inconsistent this year. Keller, we know, is really bad. Who am I leaving out? What starter am I leaving out? I get you name 4.
Well,
it's
got to
be 5.
It's whoever's in that spot, right? Junis, if it's, you know, I don't even know who is the guy right now.
Well, that's another problem.
That's the thing. Is like that's what I'm saying.
Have
it's like
to
there's
fill
not
the spots.
The fifth spot is not somebody that's always there. Like they've been moving that around.
I mean, your 4 starters are Keller, Duffy, Minor, and Singer.
Singer, yeah.
And then they don't even have a 5th. And this goes back to when the Royals weren't very good. It's like, dude, where's their 5th starter? They should have plenty of options. And quite honestly,
I mean, because Coar's done. Like, you know, Coar was the last one that had like a multiple number of starts.
He had 2 starts.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's nobody.
Not a lot.
He's been sent down.
He's been sent down
since then, and so I.
Well, they called up Richard Lovelady. That'll help everything. Brought him up. That'll, you know, bullpen left-hander. It's hard to be optimistic about the Royals right now. It really is. You know, Salvi, they're wasting a great year by Salvi, by the way. And Witt's coming around. Dozier's been horrible. Soler has done hardly anything. And so here we are. We are at the end of June, the trade deadline coming up in July. And the Royals are, after a 16-9 start, and you're thinking maybe they can make the playoffs, win the division. The Royals are 33-45. They've had 4 losing streaks of 5 games or more already. They're in the midst of a 7-game losing streak, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. You got the Red Sox again tonight. Mike Minor on the hill, 6-5 ERA, north of 5. Tomorrow, we don't even know who their starter is. We do this every 4th or 5th day. And then they play the Twins on Friday. We don't know who their starter is there either. And if you can't even come up with 5 starters, you've got a problem. And maybe that's why Lynch was forced up earlier. Cowher was brought up. Now, Cowher, I was okay with. He at least pitched some in AAA. Lynch hadn't even pitched as a starter in 19 months. And somehow they thought of bullpen sessions. He was really got great stuff. And who knows where his confidence level is. And he's just got shelled. And at that time, that's when the Royals didn't actually need to bring Lynch up. Now is the time when they should have been brought Lynch up, which maybe he would have been better now because he would have had at least a month in the minors getting some starts. I do question some of the things the Royals have done. And I go back to that decision as the one I start with. But at the end of the day, you have to have starting pitching in this league. And people can talk all about your bullpens. Yeah, your bullpens nowadays, starters get you through 5 or 6, and then you got the bullpen 7, 8, and 9. That's true. But you still need starters to get through 5 or 6. And yesterday, Brad, for the Royals to get a pitcher through 5 right now is just absolutely gut-wrenching and just hard to watch. They labor and throw 100 pitchers in 5 innings and give up 6 runs and 10 hits, like Keller last night. 5 runs, 10 hits, or 6 runs, 10 hits, whatever it was. 6 runs, 10 hits, 5 walks. That's a ton of base runners. And the thing is, the last couple of nights, the Royals have actually had the lead to start the game. And the starting pitcher's just like, you know what? We like being behind. Here you go. And I know they're trying. But what do you do now? You're 33-45. I mean, you're done. I don't see this going anywhere positive. I mean, I don't see this team turning around making the playoffs. No way in heck. So now you talk about the trade deadline. What do you do? And this is what's really irritating as a Royals fan, with the exception of 13, 14, and 15, and then 16 when the Royals traded for guys and they probably shouldn't have. 13, 14, 15, and 16. That 4-year period, really, over since 1985, there's hardly been a year where the Royals have actually added. They are always a seller instead of a buyer. The exception was 13 through 16. World Series appearances in 14 and 15, 13, they were really good late in the year. And, of course, 16, they thought they still had a shot, which was a pipe dream at the time. They hung in there. Should have been a seller instead of a buyer then. So who on this team, Dusty, is attractive as trade bait to where the Royals could get something good or decent in return? And I don't like this conversation. I hate having this conversation. Because it means my team is not very good. Mm-hmm. It means my team is out of it. And it means I've got to start hoping upon hope and getting all excited about some guy's minor league numbers at another organization, and I have no idea if he's going to be any good.
Yeah.
It's like me trading a very popular baseball card, all right? Because that's a big thing, you know, I've been talking about recently. A very popular sports card. And you say, you know what? I will give you 100 cards in an unmarked package, and you don't know what's in it. And I will take your nice Mark McGwire rookie card. Okay, I could get 5 cards in that 100 cards. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could all be horrible. And I trade a good player, and I get nothing. And that comes down to the Royals' scouting and development. There are questions now, you know, with pitching coach Cal Eldred. There's questions about the Royals in regards to the development side of things. You can draft all these great players or all these pitchers from college, and you like them a lot, but can you develop them? And the jury's still out. And maybe we're just being impatient. But this team was supposed to, you know, Ryan Lefevre said it himself on this show, and you hear the promo that we run during the week or we have in the past. Now we're running different ones. But he said, I said, what's the expectations, Ryan, for this team? He goes, to win more than they lose. To be basically around 500 or compete for a wild card or even a division.
Mm-hmm.
12 under is not doing that. This team is behind in the progress. They got Andrew Benintendi. He got hurt. He's playing pretty well. That looked like a decent trade. Carlos Santana gets on base, low batting average, not tons of power so far this year, but he's been okay. Salvi's having a great year. Dozier's been horrendous. Soler's been very bad offensively. Mondesi's always hurt. Lopez is just doing what he can. Witt's been up and down, to be honest, although lately he's been really good. Michael A. Taylor, you know, for what people thought he was going to be, I think he's been fine. But then you go back to the starting pitching. Keller's been abysmal. Miner's been up and down. Duffy was great for a while. Now he's starting to regress back to the old Duffy, in my opinion, which is one start great, next start not so good. Mm-hmm. Singer's been very up and down. And then the bullpen really has hung in there, even though their numbers aren't great overall. They've hung in there. But when they do finally get leads, it seems like lately they can't even hold them. And you've got guys like Greg Holland. Wade Davis went on the injured list. And the Royals, I never thought it was a good sign when Greg Holland and Wade Davis are on this team 6 years after they won a World Series with these guys. I'm like, dude, they're 6 years older. Do the math. And I know they're probably stopgap measures. Josh Domont, you know, looked like he was the big-time closer, and then he got hurt. Now he's not in a closer role. I don't know what the Royals' plan are in a closer role. Of course, why does it matter when you're never ahead?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about it. You know, Kyle Zimmer, you know, high-profile draft pick that pitches some now, but that was a complete miss for the Royals with the draft. And when you are bad and you continually draft at a high part of the first round or whatever it may be, high part of the rounds, you have to hit on these guys. You can't keep missing. And then the money. You give the money. Granted, it's not my money, not your money. Got a new ownership group. How patient will they be with this process? They went out and made moves to try to contend this year instead of tanking like some teams, and maybe the Royals have been better off tanking. Maybe the Royals right now would be better off just saying, you know what, see you later, Brad Keller. Okay, like you said, DFA. Maybe they're good trading Danny Duffy. Padres seem to have interest because the Royals, the only people they trade with are the Padres. So perhaps, you know, Duffy will be traded. They'll get something for Danny Duffy. Michael A. Taylor is a piece that could be good for a contending team, center fielder, defense, a little bit of pop, some speed. Maybe you trade him and get something. Carlos Santana, I think, would bring you something. What? I don't know. A triple-A prospect, a double-A prospect? I have no idea. So is there anybody else? I mean, Whit Merrifield have the most value, and the Royals continue to say they're not trading him. But at some point, maybe you should, because what good is Whit hitting 2-3 hits a game when the team keeps losing? Mm-hmm. I go back to the old Jared Allen thing. That's great. Jared Allen of the Chiefs had a whole bunch of sacks. The team was 2-14. What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. If the Royals have a dominant closer, Trevor Rosenthal had a pretty good year last year. Remember, he was closing, doing a decent job. The Royals traded him because they weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
So Greg Holland has no trade value, in my opinion.
No.
Wade Davis has none. You're not trading Josh Domont. You hope he's part of the future. You know, Kyle Zimmer doesn't have trade value. I mean, I'm going through the whole list. There's nobody on this team that has trade value other than Brady Singer. Mike Minor might have some because he'd go back to the bullpen for a team. Minor, but what are you going to get for him? I don't think you can get much.
No.
Brady Singer, you're not trading him. Duffy's the guy that you probably could get maybe the most for, and he can veto any trade because he's been, you know, a 10-year player.
Yeah.
So he has no trade clause. He can veto any trade. So even if the Royals want to trade Duffy and get something worth something in return for him, he can nix that trade. I'm sitting here, and here's the thing that's really frustrating to me. The Royals aren't very good right now. And the Royals have some veteran guys in some positions that have underperformed, and they don't have really anybody that's going to get you much in return, in my opinion.
No.
I mean, what guy's going to bring the best in a return in a trade? Probably Duffy, right?
Well, Witt.
Or Witt. I don't even consider Witt, but yeah, you're right.
I mean,
Witt, probably.
If you're after talking Witt about literal Duffy, trading prospects, Witt Merrifield's at the top of the list.
Witt and like, Duffy, yeah. Right? Who else?
Yeah, and I just don't know with Duffy's history, what you would actually get for him. I know somebody would like to have him, right?
Right.
Probably for a spot here and even just to take a rental on him. But it's like, I just don't know injury history, everything that Duffy has around him, what people would actually invest to get Danny Duffy, right?
Right.
And so, but I mean, yeah, he's probably the second best of what you would get. And then I would probably say Martinez after that because he's got a little bit of – or Santana, I mean, Martinez. I would say Santana after that because he's got a little bit of – I mean, history of having some pop and probably can help out a lineup in the postseason, I would think.
Right.
So, yeah, but after that, I don't know what people are going to give up for any of the Royals. I mean, it doesn't help you.
You don't have attractive pieces.
Say, hey, let's trade this guy and get a low A prospect for him.
Danny Duffy, unrestricted free agent after this year.
Yeah.
He's 32, and he's a lefty, and he's looked good at times this year, but coming off a forearm strain, which has to be a concern if you're going to trade for a guy. It'd be a rental for teams. The Padres don't want to bring on a ton more salary anyway, so they make sense, whether Duffy is a starter for them, whether he's out of the bullpen. But they were watching his last start against Boston, according to reports, and it was not a good start.
Yeah.
And so what do you get for Danny Duffy if you do trade him? And I will say this. I think he would sign back with the Royals because I think he wants to be a Royal for life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're sitting here going, well, they got to trade him because then he's going to leave the team and we get nothing for him as a free agent, I think he would be back. He could serve a role in this team, and clearly the Royals don't have enough arms that are ready at the big league level, and Duffy is. I just look at Danny Duffy as a guy that's never fulfilled his potential. He shows the flashes. He had that stretch where got him the 5-year, $65 million contract he's in. He had that stretch where he was a Cy Young. I mean, he was the best pitcher in baseball for 2 months. He was dominant. And then this year he's pitched pretty well there for a while, and then he got hurt, and that's been always a problem for him too. And he's just a guy that's never fulfilled the potential that he has, and it's frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating to him. But I don't see where the Royals go with any trade that's going to make them much better.
No, and you brought up the whole developing pitchers and things like that. Like
the Royals have never been good at that.
This isn't new. Like you talk about
the last time they were good at developing pitchers with Danny Jackson and Brett Saberhagen and Mark Gubazov.
Yeah, I mean, he brought up that Danny hasn't reached his potential, but he's one of the best pitchers that the Royals have even come close to developing. You know, Zach Greinke obviously was developed, but I mean, it took time off and came back to the organization. Like he left and came back.
Right.
And I mean, I know that was mostly things that he had to work out mentally, but you know, there's just not, the list isn't good. They draft these guys. We think that they're going to, you know, be starters for the Royals in 4 or 5 years. And well, half of them get traded. And then the ones that, that they keep come up and they're not ready, or they tank like we've seen the last two. They've just never done it. I think people think that because they won the World Series that changed something in that regard, and it didn't, because the Royals actually had to go out and get pitchers that were not in their system to win that World
Edison
Series.
Edison Volquez. I mean, Chris Young was a important piece of that puzzle. You know, Ventura. That's the one. Of course, he died unexpectedly.
Yeah. And so,
and who knows if he would have actually fulfilled his potential, because he was up and down and showed flashes.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was in that rotation too back then.
And I mean, obviously, it started with Shields, right? And,
sure.
And trying to get that thing rolling the right
way.
Which,
once again, not a guy they developed.
Yeah.
Not a guy they developed.
Two guys they had to bring in. And because they basically, you know, I just always remember going back to that year Dayton Moore talked at KAB Sports Seminar. He said, we want one or two of these guys to come up, each of these new pitchers, right?
Yeah.
And he's talking about the John Lambs of the world, right? Those those kind of pitchers.
Brandon and Finnegan.
Exactly. Finnegan and whatever, you know, Manaea, all those guys that got traded were the ones he was actually talking about and saying, hey, we want one of these up each year. And then once he made that trade for James Shields, it was like, yeah.
He sped up the process.
Abandoned what that process was because these guys aren't ready.
Right.
And it was obvious.
Right. Which was the right decision.
Yeah, it was absolutely the right decision.
Yeah.
But this is not a new problem that the Royals have in not developing pitchers.
It's pretty sad when we start thinking about what pitchers have they developed from when they drafted to the big league level. And the best answer we've got, and the only answer
we've
got...
And to move on is starters.
The only answer we've got is Danny Duffy.
Like all those
and Giordano names, would be the second one, and that's we still that we don't know if he would have been as inconsistent as Duffy. I mean he drove people nuts when he pitched before he died.
Yeah,
he'd have a great start, then he plunked somebody, get ejected. He had an attitude. He's a hothead, or he was a nice guy, but he was very competitive, and then he'd have one great start, and next start he wouldn't be very good, and it was like, when's he going to put it together? I remember all the questions.
Oh, yeah.
And so we don't know if he would have panned out either, but that's all I got. I got Duffy Ventura. Am I missing anybody?
No.
And Ventura, I don't even know if he counts.
Yeah, as a starter, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, because Luke Hochaver, number one pick, he's a bullpen guy.
Yeah.
Wade Davis, he's traded, hoping to be a starter, ended up being a closer. You know, anybody that the Royals drafted that they hope to be a starter, the only way it actually works for the Royals is they become a reliever. Well, everybody's got relievers. We need starting pitchers. It's very frustrating, no question about it. So we'll see what the Royals do, if they make any trades or get anything. Here's the other thing. A lot of teams nowadays, the last couple of seasons, they don't want to rent a player for just a couple months and give up prospects.
Yeah.
They're hoarding and holding on to their prospects more than ever before. So the Royals aren't going to get some big I don't think they're going to swindle anybody and get some big-time trade for, you know, a big leaguer that isn't even an all-star, really,
Whit
Merrifield, who could be, or a Danny Duffy. Washington Nationals outfielder Kyle Schwarber, there's a guy the Royals could have gone after, but they didn't, tied a Major League Baseball minor record for the most home runs hit over any 10-game stretch on Tuesday, hit his 12th. Remember, he used to be at the Cubs, signed with the Nationals, and he's red hot. Okay, college baseball, we have a deciding game three.
And this should do it on the ground. That will do it. And a dominating performance from Mississippi State. They win it 13-2 and set up a game three.
So game one was a blowout for Vanderbilt. Game two, a blowout for Mississippi State last night. Tonight, game three. Let's hope it's a close, tight game, which you expect it would be. It'll be treated like a game seven. Game three, it's a winner-take-all. 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN2. And this is very interesting. I saw this the other day. I don't know if it's true. I have to trust the graphic. I don't have time to research it. Mississippi State is one of three Division I Power 5 schools that have never won a national championship in any sport. Can we name the other two?
I saw the graphic, so yes, I can.
Well, that's what I'm asking you to do.
K-State and Virginia Tech.
I wish you'd build up the drama.
I don't want to
leave K-State at the end.
No, yeah.
Lead that,
well,
lead
I just
that
drew,
at the end.
Read it how they were listed on the graphic.
We got to work on pulling in the listener.
There was two
pull
of them.
In the
so.
Listener. Pull in the listener. Pull them
I say
in.
If there was more, I probably would have waited till the
so
end.
So this is where I would handle that one. I'd be like, okay, so Mississippi State is one, has never won a national championship in any sport. Virginia Tech's the other. And the third one? Kansas State. Yeah.
I was depressed when I saw the graphic, so it's like, that's
right.
Why I'm not
so
all about reading off the other two teams.
So if Mississippi State wins tonight, then there'll be two left, K-State and Virginia Tech, which is pretty interesting because Virginia Tech has been very good at football. So is K-State.
And it was a stretch where they were both really good at the same time. Right,
exactly. Yeah. And then, of course, K-State was really good in basketball back in the day. People don't understand that. For younger people, they were really, really, really good. And Virginia Tech hasn't really been great at basketball. Baseball, I know they had some success at times. And then you're sitting there going, and in any other sport, volleyball, I mean, any sport that you have, national champions, they don't know, but nothing. There's nothing for K-State. There's nothing for Virginia Tech, and Mississippi State can change that tonight. And they can come off that list. That is a very, very, very small list that you do not want to be a part of.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't excited about saying
it. I didn't want you. I'm not talking about being excited. I was talking about drawing in the listener and adding a little drama and suspense, but that's my fault. I threw it to you. I should have held on to it. Should build it up to people could try to figure out and go, oh, it's got to be Kansas. No, wait a minute. They won national titles of basketball. It can't be Kansas. Oh, it's got to be Colorado. No, it can't be Colorado. Kansas State. Oh, duh. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Kansas State, you know, the ones that make DVDs after winning a regular season game against Kansas. No wonder they do that because they've never won a national championship. I know, low blow. That was mean. But anyway, K-State, Mississippi State, Virginia Tech. None of those three institutions have won a national championship in any sport. Mississippi State can do that tonight, 6 o'clock against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt trying to go back-to-back. How many times do you see a team trying to go back-to-back and repeat and they come just short?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens tonight, ESPN2. The NBA playoffs. You know, just when you think you have something figured out, you have no idea. Last night, Trae Young out, which surprised me, and I'm sure you as well. And, of course, immediately you say, what? Bucks are going to win, right? And my feeling was, when I heard Trae Young was out, I was like, I don't know how the Hawks are going to win, but I'll bet you the Bucks have a letdown. That was my first thought. I still thought they'd have enough to win. No. Hawks won at home without Trae Young. The Hawks won by 22 over the Bucks.
Williams, he is 5-5. Williams chasing with Giannis. Williams came up with it. Goes to the fade.
Lou Williams was fantastic. He hasn't been playing a lot. I've wondered why he wasn't playing more. I've thought that the whole series, although I do know that defensively he's a bit of a liability at times. He's a really good shooter. He can fill it up. He's been a Sixth Man of the Year award winner in the NBA. And he got the start, and he has the best game of his career. First start ever in the playoffs, and it was his best game of his career. He filled in 7-9 from the field, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists. And the Hawks cruise without Trae Young and win the ball game by 22 to even series at 2 apiece. Kevin Huerter had 15 points. Clint Capella had 15 points and a crazy shot from behind the backboard. Did you see that turnaround shot? Bogdanovich had 20 points and 6 three-pointers. Lou Williams with 21. Cam Reddish, who had been hurt most of the playoffs, he had 12 points. Gallinari had 10. And this is what I've said before, is that at any level, when a guy gets hurt, you can mope, you can whine, you can complain, you can feel sorry for yourselves, or you can say next man up. And whenever there's an injury or illness or sickness, whatever the case may be, there's always opportunity for somebody else on your roster. And sometimes all you got to do is look back to when Trent Green got hurt, a guy you never heard of called Kurt Warner. Mm-hmm. And he became a Hall of Fame quarterback. There's another guy named Tom Brady. Remember Drew Bledsoe got hurt? Oh, God, Patriots, like, who's their going to be quarterback? Some sixth-round pick out of Michigan. That turned out all right. And I've wondered this, and I've said this before in the show, how many guys don't get the opportunity that Tom Brady and Kurt Warner got? Like, how many backup quarterbacks in the league, if that starter would have gone down and got hurt and would have had that chance, would have been a Hall of Famer or won a Super Bowl? But we never found out because, you know, the starter always was healthy, and then he got moved around and jumped to teams as a backup and never really got a chance. And that sometimes happens in NBA players, although less likely in NBA. But in football, you see it certainly, where next guy up, oh, there's an undrafted free agent or undrafted running back you never heard of taking over for Jamal Charles. Hey, that guy, you know, Spencer Ware is not that bad of a player. I didn't know he could run the ball like that. Darrell Williams, who's this guy? Wow, he runs pretty good. He's better than Le'Veon Bell. But Le'Veon Bell's a name. So, this Chad Henne guy hasn't played hardly at all. Look what he did against the Browns. Comes in there and does a good job. I've always believed this, that when you lose a key player in a team sport, there usually, not always, but there usually is this one game. Usually, I think it's one game, but maybe it can last a few games where you rally the troops. And you gather, and if you're a tight-knit team, and you say, listen, we're not going to let this injury define our season. We are going to rally for Trae Young. We're going to rally for ourselves. We've come too far to just roll over for the Bucks, is an example, of course, last night. And how many times do you see teams rally around a different guy leading the way or rally around an injured player? You see it a lot. And all you got to do is look at the NBA playoffs. This year, I mean, let's look at it. Kawhi Leonard goes down. Clippers are toast, right? Nope. Clippers win against the Jazz. Oh, Clippers are toast. They're down 0-2. Now it's 3-2, and I think they got a great chance of winning game 6 tonight against Phoenix. No Kawhi Leonard. Clippers are toast, right? Chris Paul's in COVID protocols. Oh, my God. Who's going to play the point guard spot for Phoenix? Oh, that they ain't no way they're going to win both games without Chris Paul. They did. Mm. Won both. Guy named Cameron Payne got a chance at 29 points. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he sprained his ankle the next game. And honestly, I think that's hurt Phoenix quite a bit in regards to their bench rotation. And Paul has to play more minutes. And Trae Young last night, we mentioned Lou Williams coming up with and Bogdanovich. And all these guys picked up the slack, man. And sometimes when you got a guy that shoots the ball a lot, and Trae Young usually does, sometimes a guy that has the ball a lot, sometimes when that guy is gone for a game or two, all of a sudden there's more ball movement or more players are more involved in the offense, and you're not just drawing up plays for one guy. It's just, hey, we're going to go to the open guy. Sometimes it's a blessing in disguise for a short period of time.
Yeah.
Long period of time, it catches up to you. And now Giannis is hurt. Giannis, if you didn't know what happened to him last night, he had to leave game 4 against the Hawks after suffering a hyperextended left knee. It did not look good when he got hurt. During the third quarter, he had 14 points in 24 minutes. It should be noted the Bucks were still down 10 when he got hurt. I don't think the Bucks would have came back and won with Giannis. And there's two things we need to talk about here. First of all, how did the Bucks lay that big of an egg? Like, don't give me an excuse Giannis got hurt. You were getting your butts kicked when he was playing. How did the Bucks go into Atlanta, and Atlanta has no Trae Young, and how did the Bucks only score 88 points, and Lou Williams is a defensive liability, is what part of the reason why he didn't play as much. How in the world do the Milwaukee Bucks go into Atlanta and chuck 39 threes and make only 8? How do the Bucks, in a game where they can absolutely just take this series by the throat, and the best player for the other team isn't even playing? And not only do you go in Atlanta and, okay, you can understand, tough, tight game, you pull away in the fourth quarter. No, they lost by 22. Mm-hmm. This is maddening if you're a Bucks fan. Like, how do you play so well in game 3 and look awesome? Because that was a game you felt you had to win. Last night, you apparently didn't feel like you had to win it. Kenny Smith and Barkley and Shaq on Inside NBA after the game were talking about this last night, and I agreed with them. And Kenny Smith is very careful not to be too critical. Kenny Smith's like the politician, you know, of that group. Shaq will, you know, still be stuck in the old days. Charles sometimes, and Shaq always forgets that he was 7 feet, 335 pounds. You know, Charles sometimes gets into his own generation versus the current generation. Shaq more so. But Charles usually has some really good points. I think he brings up a lot of great points. But the thing is, Charles isn't afraid to mix it up. He's not afraid to be critical of people, and he has played the game, so I lend credibility to that. Kenny Smith rarely says anything super controversial on that show. He's the guy of reason, right? He'll break down the play. He'll talk about this. He'll be a little bit more philosophical, if that's a term I'm trying to come up with. Last night, he was asked by Ernie Johnson what he thought, and he goes, candidly or politically? And Ernie's like, candidly, what do you think? He goes, that was a team that was not prepared to play.
Mm-hmm.
That, how are you not prepared to play game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals up 2-1? Like, I get that you probably have a bit of, you relax when there's no Trae Young. I get that. That's pretty human nature for most teams. Like, the other team's suddenly best player out, and you think you have a cakewalk. But how do you not, like Kenny Smith mentioned, why aren't you pressuring Lou Williams when he brings the ball off the floor? He's not as good a ball handler as Trae Young. Why don't you make him labor? He's an older player. There was no real good game plan. That's on the coaches. That's on the players. There's no sense of urgency. Now, game 5 will be completely different, I'll imagine. And even without Giannis, the Bucks will come out fired up, I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? Maybe Trae and Giannis both don't play. Or Trae plays, Giannis doesn't, and everybody's going to say what? Hawks are going to win. No Giannis. Trae's back. And then watch the Bucks win.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen teams rally without their injured stars in series and in games in the playoffs. So that's the first topic, is what? How do you possibly lay that big fat of an egg? It's not like you're up 3-1. You're up 2-1. Now you're not even up. It's 2-2. You've allowed this series to become best 2 out of 3. And yes, Milwaukee has 2 games at home, but without Giannis, that certainly doesn't seem guaranteed. How does a team do that?
I think it starts with
Barkley said it's leadership. That's what he said.
Well, I think it's absolutely leadership, right, no matter what team that is.
Yeah.
But it starts, I think, in the mindset and creeping in with Trae Young not being in the lineup. I think that's where that starts, right?
Right.
And so they probably had some kind of game plan that would change because Trae's not out there. So they're probably, you know, in their mind, they're like, well, whatever. We'll figure it out as the game goes on how we need to adjust to that. And they never do, right? Because they just feel like it's going to be a cakewalk without – the star over there for Atlanta, right? And I think a lot of teams have that mindset. I think that's why a lot of teams, you know, I think we focus on the fact that other players step up, right, when their stars hurt. But I think a lot of what goes into that, too, is the other team has this mindset, right, wrong, or otherwise, that we're going to go into this game and win because he's not playing.
Right.
And so it's everything combined of these guys know they have to play better because their guy's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And this team thinks we're just going to win because he's not there. And I think that's a lot of probably what we saw last night, mm-hmm. right? But, again, you got to be more prepared going into a game than that. I mean, and I have more focus on what you're trying to accomplish because, again, like you said, you have a chance to take a 3-1 lead here and go back to Milwaukee. Like, this is not – something that you just throw away and say, hey, we've got more chances in this series. We're not done if we lose. That's an opportunity that you got to take by and grab it by the horns and take it. And obviously, I like Budenholzer because he's a Popovich apostle, you know, a guy that came from his staff. But, like, I don't know that he's the coach that can prepare these teams for these kind of moments. I mean, he had it in Atlanta and it didn't work out when he was there first, and now in Milwaukee. And I think that's where it starts. And then it starts with your leadership at top with Giannis too, and making sure that he's got them ready to go. And so, yeah, there's all these things that we've talked about with the Bucks in the past, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are kind of rearing their ugly head for him again here in a situation like this. Like, you got to figure out, what are you going to do to pull yourself away from the pack here?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not doing it right now. They're not prepared. They're not, you know, I'm not in their heads. I don't know exactly what's going on, but obviously there's an issue at the top.
So how do we explain teams without stars winning games when they shouldn't on paper? And there are two reasons to explain it, or how I'm going to explain it. And I'll use the Chiefs as an example 2 years ago. Patrick Mahomes got hurt. They feared he'd be out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Moore, because Henny was on the injury reserve, Matt Moore had to start 2 games for the Chiefs that year. He played pretty well against the Packers, but they lost to Aaron Rodgers on a Monday night game at Arrowhead. And the next week, they had a last-second field goal, rallied, and beat the Vikings. And I remember, like, how the Vikings, like, people, Viking fans, like, how can we lose to the Chiefs? They own Mahomes. We lost to Matt Moore, who wasn't even on the team to start the year. Okay, a couple things. One, and I'm not really trying to defend the Bucks and what happened last night, but they're not the first team to go through something like
No.
this. I think the first thing that happens is obviously there's a letdown, but I think the other thing is, if it happens shortly before game time, you prepare all week long, assuming, and the other team of course plays coy usually, you prepare all week long, or the time between NBA basketball games, between Game 3 and Game 4 in the case of the Bucks and the Hawks, and you and I even said it yesterday, Trae Young's questionable, and we said, yeah, ha-ha, he's going to play.
Yeah.
And that's probably what the Bucks thought.
Yeah.
So do you think the Bucks changed their game plan and go, well, you know, he's questionable, let's put in this game plan if Trae doesn't play?
No.
No,
there's
they had
not time.
There wasn't time. So the game plan was to what? It was to slow down Trae Young. This is the game plan we've had. We got to tweak it. But then if Trae Young doesn't play, the game plan completely changes defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't make any adjustments within game. And so that's why I believe that you have this one game, people rally around one another, because part of it is your team within, and then part of it's the other team scrambling because they don't know how to adjust to the new guy, even if he's not as good as the star player, because he's a different type of player. The second part of the equation is that players become even more focused on the team that lost the star player,
mm-hmm.
and other guys get more of an opportunity to play. And I'm going to use the Chiefs as an example, and I'm going to go to something that Tyrann Mathieu said, who, by the way, is one of the leaders on the team. And you have to have leadership. 2 years ago, Mahomes went out. He missed 2 games. He came back sooner than some people expected. And before they got ready to go to Tennessee, and I remember this very vividly because the Chiefs ended up losing to Tennessee, a game they should have won. Mahomes came back through for like 400 and some yards, and the Chiefs defense went back to the way they were. when Mahomes had been playing early in the year. Chiefs gave up tons of yards on the ground, gave up, and they blew the game. Their defense was atrocious, so forth and so on. But I remember Tyrann Mathieu saying about Matt Moore being the starting quarterback. How does that change things for you with Patrick not on the field? And Mathieu says, it makes us tighten things up a bit. We know we're probably not going to score as many points offensively, so thus, we are, and he made it, basically you can interpret in between the lines, there's even more focus on the small stuff and the details. There's less leeway for error because, less margin for error because, you know, we're not going to score 40 points now with Matt Moore at quarterback. We're probably going to have to win games in the 20s instead of the 30s or 40s. And you know the Chiefs defense played pretty well those 2 weeks, didn't they? And all of a sudden Mahomes came back, and what happened? They went backwards because they're like, oh, Mahomes is back. And that is somewhat human nature. And I think that's what happened last night in this game between the Bucs and the Hawks is the Bucs weren't able to make a quick adjustment. And by the way, you don't have lots of game film of Matt Moore. I know he's been a quarterback for a long time, but not in Andy Reid's system. So when you try to prepare for Matt Moore, you had one film to look at, and that was Green Bay for the Vikings. And you don't have as much to really work on in regards to getting prepared for Matt Moore as it was to Patrick Mahomes, who obviously poses even more problems. But then it's a difference in the game. What'd the Chiefs do more with Matt Moore? They did more play-action passing. They didn't throw the balls deep as they did with Mahomes, right? And Matt Moore, the Chiefs ran the ball more often than they did with Patrick Mahomes. So suddenly the Vikings go in this game, and their defensive game plan, even though they had time to prepare, although the Chiefs were kind of throwing out, yeah, Mahomes might be able to play this week, and that was on purpose, even though they knew he wasn't going to play. The Vikings now have to go, okay, we got to prepare for a team that's going to be more ball control. They're going to short passing game, and they're going to do play action. For instance, the Packers, you know, they didn't think Mahomes was going to play, but they didn't have anything. Moore hadn't played except a quarter and looked really not very good a couple quarters against Denver on that Monday night when Mahomes got hurt. Mm-hmm. And so Reed gets a full week of practice. The team can regroup from the injury to Mahomes, and the leaders on the team make you focus in like Tyrann Mathieu. And that's why you can do it. For a game or two, maybe a week or two, you can rally the troops. You can overcome a really great player getting hurt. Now, sometimes you can't, but you can usually. But long-term, teams adjust. And that's where I'm going with this. Game five, Bucks and Hawks. Whether Giannis plays or not, and whether Trae Young plays or not, the Bucks, I would be very surprised if the Bucks don't have a better defensive plan and don't have plans, two plans in place to defend differently if Trae Young doesn't play and they defend Lou Williams better. They're going to have more time to prepare for different possibilities. They didn't have much time to prepare. Obviously, this came out shortly before game time and wasn't going to play. So they don't have any time to prepare before the game to adjust what they're going to do. They did in game. You had halftime to make an adjustment. In-game adjustments, some coaches are better at it than others. Some are great preparing all week long, but can't make adjustments in-game. I think Doc Rivers is one of those guys. He doesn't make a lot of good adjustments during the game. You know, sometimes Andy Reid, he's all week long, great plan, and then sometimes he doesn't adjust. I think every coach at times fails to adjust. But some are good having more time to adjust, and others, when you got to go quickly within the game, it's a little bit more difficult. And I think the Bucs are going to be a much better defensive team the next time out, whether Trae Young plays or not. And then the flip side, if Giannis can't go, now the Hawks are in the same boat because I guarantee you the Bucs are going to play this all the way up to game time as well. Well, you know, Giannis, he's looking better. We might be able to play, even though they're full of, you know what, and he ain't going to play. And the Hawks are going to have to try to put in a game plan of plan A, plan B. Well, you know, that knee did look pretty bad. I highly doubt he's going to play. But if you put in a game plan to play the Bucks without Giannis, and then Giannis does Willis Reed style and comes out and plays and he's effective, then that game plan's messed up. So you have to have almost a plan A and a plan B if you're the Hawks and the Bucks right now, because star players for each team are banged up or hurt. And so it's fascinating to me what's going to happen in game five, which will be coming up I believe tomorrow night. In Milwaukee in a pivotal game five. So can you explain that the Bucks lost to a Hawks team without Trae Young? Yes, I can't explain getting their butts kicked. That part I can't I can't explain. Now to the second part, the injuries. I know there are people out there that don't like LeBron James. I know there's people out there that love LeBron James. LeBron James was right on this one. He said it as soon as he heard the NBA was going to start in December. He said that's way too soon. He said we need the proper rest and we need to recover. We came off the short. You know, he had the layoff in between the regular season last year, basically, and he finished it up, and then the bubble, and then you were stuck in there for the Lakers part. They were stuck in the bubble for basically 2 full months.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't ideal either. And honestly, if there's ever a time to have more of a break after a season, it would have been this year because of the mental part of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's all about money. And if you want to sit here and tell me that owners care so much about their players individually and as people, you know what? Some might. But collectively, they work together, the billionaires versus the millionaires, and they will run these players into the ground if they're allowed to. And so it was all about money because LeBron thought the plan would be to start mid-late January. And all of a sudden, he got wind that, whoa, we're going to start in time for Christmas. And LeBron's like, whoa, that means we have 70 days in between seasons. Mm-hmm. And LeBron said, players are probably going to get hurt. You don't have the proper recovery time. You don't have the same off-season program. And LeBron is very particular and meticulous about his off-season program. And then what happened this year? Lots of injuries to key players, especially in the playoffs. And I think he was absolutely right. And I thought he was right at the time, probably, too. But it was all about money. The NBA is like, you know what? If you told the NBA right now this is what you would have, and was it worth it to start the season earlier, they would have said yes. Because they're still getting money off these games. Whether these superstars play or not, people are still watching the games. And these superstars, there's usually a couple on each team. So it's not like, you know, if every single superstar was out of the playoffs with injury, then yes, that would change the ratings probably. But they're still getting the games played. So it was about maximizing the box office, maximizing as many games as you could get. So let's hurry and get it out there before Christmas instead of waiting until maybe the end of January, which would have been better for the players. So don't give me this stuff that the owners care so much about the well-being of the players. It's a business. They want to make money. And if they're allowed to and there was no players' union and association, they would run them into the ground. The NFL would play 20 games if they're allowed to. You don't think they would? Yeah, they would.
Yeah, they would.
I guarantee you they would. So the NBA, they would play 100 games if they could. But there's something called a union, and that protects you, at least sometimes. Donovan Mitchell said, before the playoffs began, Donovan Mitchell said, so when people jump on the wagon now, it's convenient, but Donovan Mitchell said this before the playoffs began, that he felt the team that would win the title would be the team that is the healthiest, the team that gets through unscathed. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, he looks pretty smart, too. Because I know people are saying, well, injuries are determining who's going to win the playoffs and the championship. It's the conference finals. We already knew that. Okay? If you didn't notice, in the first round, AD was hurt. LeBron was 100%. If you didn't notice, in the first round, Harden, he came back. The Nets weren't full. So the second round, obviously, the Nets had all kinds of problems with injuries. I mean, Embiid was banged up right away in the playoffs.
Through a meniscus injury, yeah.
Yeah, so he came back and played as much as he could. All you got to do is look what happened to the Lakers and Nets, who were supposedly the favorites to go to the NBA Finals. Well, look at the Denver Nuggets, Jamal Murray.
I was just going there, yeah.
Jamal Murray, they're the three seed.
The series is just completely different against Phoenix, just matchup-wise if he's playing,
absolutely,
right? Like, there's no question. And that's why I didn't really like the matchup for the Nuggets, because Murray wasn't playing, right?
Yeah.
And like, everything goes into that with who you're playing, when you're playing them, and who you have available. I mean, the Nuggets are a prime example of that.
Absolutely. And you know, Kawhi's out, and you got Trae Young missing a game, and you got Giannis that might be out. And you know, Chris Paul was, Booker, you know, he took one to the face, had to wear a mask. He still played, but that affects his game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Donovan Mitchell, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
The first round, he had an ankle. He missed the last 17 games of the season, came back in game two, and they lost game one, came back, they won four straight. And we can go on and on about all the stars that are either banged up or are injured. And let's be honest about this. Every year in the NBA playoffs, these guys are not 100% going in the playoffs.
No.
They're not. They never are. But the thing is, you don't see this many injuries in the playoffs. This is something that we're not used to seeing, at least to the star players. Every team has to go through injuries. And I see people now talking on social media about this should be an asterisk. Why? Why should the NBA season be an asterisk? If there is an asterisk, it should have been for the bubble you just had. If there's no asterisk for that, there's no asterisk for this. Just because James Harden gets hurt and Kyrie Irving gets hurt and Anthony Davis and LeBron James is banged up and Donovan Mitchell gets hurt and Joel Embiid gets hurt and Kawhi Leonard gets hurt and Chris Paul's on COVID protocols, and I could go on and on and on, they still play the games. They still count. That's part of sports. whether the NBA screwed up and got as much money as they could and put the players at risk, and the players probably should have said, you know what, we're going to strike, we're not going to play, whatever, we're going to boycott. They still agreed to it, mm-hmm. right? But and they had money to lose, too, because of COVID last year. So it came down to money. So from that angle, you can say, well, I don't feel sorry for the players because, you know what, they decided to play, so forth and so on. But it does certainly point out the need to have an off season and prepare and recover your bodies. These guys are not machines. They're not robots. But when you're sitting here and you're talking about how, well, there should be an asterisk on the season. Why? Because your favorite team is out of the playoffs and your favorite player got hurt? Okay, that's convenient. I mean, there should be – I'm sorry. This just in, I think there should be an asterisk on the 1997 national champion Arizona Wildcats. You know why? Because Jared Haas was hurt and didn't play in the Sweet 16. Number one team in the country, KU, didn't play full strength against Arizona. So let's punch an asterisk on that one, right? I mean, come on, people. Just because there's more injuries in the NBA doesn't mean you put an asterisk on it. Because that's what it is. It's called, it's a long season. It's survival of the fittest. I'm sorry, are we putting an asterisk on Tom Brady's 7th Super Bowl win? Because we should. The Chiefs had no right tackle or no left tackle. Oh, my God, these guys are hurt. Put an asterisk on it. You can do that. Every team that makes it into the NBA playoffs, wins a championship, makes it in the NFL playoffs, every single team in every single professional sport has a player that they would like to have that is hurt, that does not play at some point during the playoffs. DeAndre Hunter is one of the Hawks' best defenders and a very good player. He's not playing right now. And you're all talking about Trae Young. He's very important to their team. So is there an asterisk? Nope. Because they're still playing. So Hawk fans are like, well, there's no asterisk. But what? Well, you could put one there, DeAndre Hunter. Well, Trae Young's hurt. Okay, I'm going to jump on the asterisk bandwagon. No, that's part of sports. You know, the benefit of some teams is having depth. So teams that have injuries are able to overcome them and thus win a championship. Instead of putting all your money in three players like Irving, Harden, and Durant, you could have had a superstar with better role players. Maybe that would have worked. I don't know. You're putting all your eggs in the basket of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Are you going to win a title with one of those guys out? No. We saw that. The answer is no. But you put so much money and spend so much money, and then you got to go get guys like Markieff Morris off the scrap heap to fill out your roster. So that's part of it. For anybody out there whining about an asterisk and talking about, oh, these playoffs are just so scarred because all the star players are out, I agree it takes away from the playoffs. Totally get that point. But don't sit here and come at me and tell me, well, there should be an asterisk because there's just too many star players hurt. If you go back and look at the NBA playoffs, you might find out that there are just as many players who have been hurt in previous NBA playoffs. It's just that they weren't the stars.
Yeah.
But you don't pay attention to the role player. You don't play the, you don't, oh, the sixth man. Well, just next guy up. But you don't say that when Trae Young gets hurt.
No.
Right? As a fan, or Giannis, or LeBron, or AD, or Harden, or Irving, or whoever. So this is part of how sports works. You know what? That San Francisco 49ers should have, of all people, should put an asterisk on last year's NFL season. They had like 10 starters out for the season. Their best defensive players are out. Their quarterback got hurt. Their top two running backs were out. One of their best linemen was out. And should there be an asterisk because they had a whole bunch of injuries? Sometimes you're snake bitten. That's part of the game. They still crowned a champion. That was Tampa Bay. As I said before, what if the Chiefs had two healthy tackles? Should I, as a Chiefs fan, should I put an asterisk on that one? Because they didn't have two healthy tackles? No, it's part of the game, man. It's part of the game. Would we like to see the stars play? Absolutely. Is it better to have the stars playing? Absolutely. Do you want to rain on the parade and lessen the accomplishment of winning a title because it happened in a bubble? Or you want to lessen the accomplishment because it makes you feel better because your team didn't win the title and it helps you to lessen the accomplishment by saying that, well, you know, I put an asterisk on it. This one doesn't mean as much because, you know, these star players were hurt. Sorry, boys and girls. There's a team that's going to hoist the O'Brien Trophy at the end of the NBA Finals. And that team will have earned it. That team will have deserved it. And that team will have it for the rest of their lives. There is no asterisk on it. Just like the Lakers never put an asterisk on their championship they won last year. So if you're a Laker fan talking about an asterisk on this year's playoffs, you're a complete and utter hypocrite, because you didn't put no asterisk on your championship last year. I can assure you of that.
No.
You win a championship, you don't apologize for it. And as some players said, why should there be an asterisk on the bubble championship season? That was the hardest one to win. We had the long break in between. Then we go into a bubble. We can't go anywhere except on the Disney World properties. We couldn't be around family and friends, stuck in hotel rooms, which I know there's worse things in life. You know, people don't have homes and are homeless. But the point being is that of all the championships to win, and there should be an asterisk. Yeah, there should be an asterisk because it's the hardest one to win, not because it's in a bubble. Nobody had home court advantage. So championships always entail luck. Championships always depend on health, no matter what sport. Let's not act like this is something new.
Yeah.
What's new is the amount of stars getting hurt, which I think you can attribute to what LeBron James and Donovan Mitchell were saying.
Yeah. I feel like anybody could have seen that coming, right?
Sure.
Like, I don't think it was a revelation what LeBron James said about starting this thing in December, right?
Well, a lot of people kind of blew it off.
Blew it off. And the NBA blew it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody blew it off because they just wanted to start the season, right? They wanted to get going.
You bet.
And,
Lost money with COVID. So
yeah,
they wanted to make
exactly. And so front and back side of everything that's gone on with COVID, I think there's some teams that have been hurt by it with injuries, obviously, this year. I think, honestly, the Lakers benefited from the break last year.
I totally agree.
Because LeBron James was clean and healthy and mm-hmm. rested up,
and
ready to
too.
Go. And those older guys that were on their team were rested and ready, right?
Yes, sir.
On a normal year, they're going right into the playoffs. Maybe they'll have some of those nagging injuries you're talking
right.
about with the role players that couldn't play or something, you
right.
know? And I really – so, yeah, if you're a Lakers fan saying there needs to be an asterisk, well, you got helped out, I feel like, by having a break. Now, the delay – is different than what you actually had to deal with while you were in the bubble. I mean, mm-hmm. that's taxing on no matter what team was there mentally to not be able to go anywhere and do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
To have to be stuck here. Now, you were kicked out of that bubble right when you lost. Like, there was no stay in the night, pack your stuff, get out of here. And so some of those people were, we've talked about that last year, some of them teams were actually not disappointed that they lost in the playoffs because they were just done with that whole thing, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. But obviously you wanted to win the championship, and the Lakers did that, and I feel like the break obviously helped them get ready and be fresh for the playoffs with, again, an older star that's on their team trying to get a ring. And so, yeah, on the backside of obviously everything that's going on with COVID, maybe we would have had a little bit of a better situation injury-wise if they would have started late January. But I feel like they start mid-January. We're still seeing a lot of these issues. That's still not a lot of time in between.
Sure.
So now I'm going forward, too, for, like, these guys that are playing in the Olympics this year.
That's why I don't have any problem with players saying I'm not playing
yeah.
Olympics this year. I have no problem with stars stepping out. We talked about that the other day. They've still got plenty of stars that are going to do it. But I'm looking at Chris Middleton as an example. He's still playing in the playoffs, and then he's got to just go straight into the Olympics.
Yeah, and Booker's going to be
the same
way,
and after having
the
bubble,
right?
Yeah, and Middleton older, Booker's younger. But, yeah, absolutely. There's a couple
of
examples.
But, I mean, there's going to be times where it doesn't matter your age, right? That's going to add up sometime. And so, you know, you're taxing your body right now, and you could pay for it 5, 6, 7 years down the road, Devin Booker, right?
Yeah.
If they keep continuing to be good and, like, play as many games as LeBron James. I mean, he's talked about this multiple times.
Sure.
You know, like, I played in so many playoff games, and then you don't get
in the finals
but
every year.
The issue is, like, when are you going to start then the next NBA season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're already a month later when you're
yes.
going to finish this season.
Right.
And so are you planning on starting this in October again?
I bet you they are.
And that's what, I mean, I think that was the purpose of starting in December this year, just mm-hmm. to move that up
right.
closer this year so it wouldn't take as long on the backside to get back to a normal schedule. So I don't think they'll probably have as many preseason games,
mm-hmm.
but I'll bet they're starting the regular season like normal again, either late October or very early November.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, this is not just a one-year thing.
No.
And that's a lot of things
that
we're dealing with in sports right now if you want to get back to normal.
This
right?
is what people
to your
have
normal
been,
timeline.
This is what we've been trying to say a few times, and other people have talked about it, and is that everybody, I think the easy thing to do, and I get it, I'm guilty of it too. You look at what happened in 2020 with COVID, and you just say, okay, that wiped out a year of sports. It messed up 1 year of sports, and we'll just get right back on track. It's going to take 3 to 5 years to get back on track in regards to schedules for the most
yeah.
part. Because, I mean, you just talk, for instance, the NBA, like the NFL is fine. They didn't have to, they actually didn't have to change much.
They played the whole season.
Okay, the NFL is fine. Baseball, you know, they actually were fine because they had the shortened season. But the NBA is one that actually had the long break because of when COVID struck and were able to finish. And the fact that they finished last year in the bubble, had they just not done the bubble, they'd still, they'd be back on regular schedule. But they wanted to finish it, and they did. But there is a consequence for that. And the consequence is it affects at least the next two seasons. Mm. At least. Because we already know it's affected this season. And less games overall with 72, 10 less games. Yeah. And then all the injuries that we believe is attributed to that. But then, like you said, you're going later now to July for the finals this year. And then are you going to start in October like you used to do? Or are you going to wait till mid-late November or wait till December 1? And you're going to shorten the season? Or are you going to just play more games in a shorter span of time? Or are you going to get into a regular, hey, July is going to be our thing? Is that your new schedule now? Or you're going to start, you know, late November, early December and go through July? If that's the case, that's fine. You then at least got a regular schedule. There will be a shorter break between what they're used to, between the end of the finals this year and also going into next season. However, it'll be a longer break than what they just had after the bubble going into this season. So that will be a little bit better. In regards to the Olympics, you know, that's a choice for each player to make. Mm-hmm. And so I have no problem. It's amazing to me how people some people have never even stepped on a basketball court and ran up and down the floor once can sit here and be mad at players for not serving our country, or not serving our country, but representing our country in the Olympics for men's basketball. Like, Chris Paul's done that multiple times. Mm-hmm. LeBron's done that multiple times. In fact, to me, it's better if other guys experience it. So there's some people upset or disappointed because LeBron's not going to play in it, or AD's not going to play in it, or Harden's not going to play in it. And it's like, dude, these guys are coming off injuries. Steph Curry's not going to play in it. There's plenty of guys that go play. We know this. And so if they want to play, they can play. And I look at some of the guys that are playing, they've had a nice break because they got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Chris Middleton, I mean, you have to give him credit. He wants to play in the Olympics, and Devin Booker as well. But Middleton is definitely older. And as we know, as you get older, it gets a little bit harder to recuperate. So now you go to the Olympics. Now guess what? Chris Middleton just shortened his offseason by quite a bit.
Yeah.
It is a major commitment for players to play in the Olympics, and they can choose to do that. Now, if Chris Middleton comes back and says, well, I got hurt next year because they did this, the NBA. It's like, dude, you chose to go to the Olympics. That was your call. So I have no problem with guys wanting to play. I have no problem with guys opting out of the Olympics because we got plenty of guys that go over there and play. And if LeBron doesn't want to play and he needs a break, recover, and Steph Curry needs to recover, and AD and whoever else, James Harden, I totally get it. And I don't understand why people are so upset and get riled up and upset and mad because these guys choose to not go play. They've already done it. They've won gold medals for USA. It's okay to pass the torch to other guys and let them have that same experience. That's what I talk about with volunteering. You know, well, the A-Man All-Star Games, some of the same people do it each and every year. And like at some point, the baton's got to be passed to other people, younger people, to do this because eventually we all die. So we can't do it forever. And so, and then somebody like, well, they get all mad because somebody did it for 20 years and now they're not going to do it for 1 year. But maybe they needed a break. Maybe they need to step back and catch their breath and they'll help again next year for the 8-man game. I just use that example because, you know, obviously we got some people that have been doing it for a very long time and we appreciate everything they do. But don't hate on somebody for taking a break or saying, you know what, I've carried the weight and it's time for somebody else to do it. And oh, by the way, I've already done this for our country, not serving our country, but I've represented our country. I've played, I've entertained, we won gold medals, but I also I'm 36 years old, Chris Paul. I'm LeBron. I'm 37 years old. I want to make sure my career lasts as long as it can. And I'm coming off of injuries. And I'm coming off a bubble. And I'm coming off the shortest offseason. And now we're seeing guys going down left and right. Just adds to my belief I made the right decision by not going to the Olympics. Because there are plenty of other guys that can go play there. So it is interesting how players approach it. And I give credit to Middleton and Booker and others that are going to play, especially Middleton because he's older. But he's still playing. He's not going to have a break before he goes into the Olympics. And some of these other guys will. And some other guys had a break and could play in Olympics and are choosing to say, you know what, I need a full off season to get back to where I was because COVID messed all that up last year. I respect all those ideas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, and yeah, and everybody's got to make their decision the way they feel fit, right?
Best personally
and
for them.
What they want to do, you know. There's some people that are going to put that above, you know, representing your country in the Olympics above a lot of things that they're going to do in life. So they're going to go do that. But yeah, the timeline's just going to be messed up. That's what it is. And so it's unfortunate, I feel like, that there's been this many injuries. But we're going to see injuries next year, too.
Sure you will. You're always injuries.
And it's the timeline. That's why I'm bringing that up on the backside of this COVID thing, mm-hmm. because the timeline's not right until at least 2022.
I agree, which means at COVID affected you earliest. At least two seasons, if not three. Yeah. There's a trickle-down effect. All right, Suns-Clippers tonight, Game 6 on ESPN. I've got the Clippers forcing the Game 7. Dusty's got the Suns finishing it.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
Okay, all right. We talk about injuries. How about tennis? Serena, they've had problems with the dirt there and a little bit of moisture at Wimbledon. Chris Everett was kind of critical of this yesterday after Serena got hurt. And she said, yeah, you would think there's something they could do. They dry that out better or whatever they got to do. You would think. I agree with her. And when you got star players in tennis getting hurt, like a Serena Williams, that's not good for the sport. Especially, you know, in NBA, you can overcome it because you've got other players and other stars. And in women's tennis, there is one star. Well, there's two. Osaka, who didn't play, isn't playing, opted out, withdrew. And there is Serena. And now she had to retire 3-3 in the first set of her first match yesterday because she slipped on that space there behind the baseline. And not only did it affect that match, and it's unfortunate that she's done because she's the biggest name in tennis on women's side, but that's individual sport. So you can't, you know, when you're an individual sport, it makes it tougher for you when you lose star players to injuries. Like Tiger Woods, not having him on the golf course. There's no doubt you benefit when he comes back and wins the Masters. Or Phil Mickelson, he's hurt, and it helps when you have him back. But then yesterday, it also affected another star player, but in the reverse way, didn't it? Roger Federer was in big-time trouble. Big-time trouble. Going to fifth set, tied two sets all, first round of Wimbledon. That's probably the only place he's going to win a major again at his age. And explain what happened in his match.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he was down 2-1. He had to come back and win the fourth set, and that's when his opponent kind of got hobbled a little bit.
He slipped in the same area behind the baseline at Wimbledon. So and he had to retire just like that.
Could have been a fifth set, and boom, he's done. Like,
didn't we say this yesterday? Is it worth it? Like, is it worth it? Like, there's a guy, was it worth it? He played for 4 hours and got to the fifth set and then got hurt and can't control it. Was it worth it? Yeah, it was worth
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
He put himself in position to be one of the best players in the world. It just didn't end up the way he wanted it.
Yeah, even the way it ended for him, he can be like, well, I was up 2-1 on Roger Federer.
Yeah.
It was absolutely worth
we're
it.
We're tied
it didn't
going
end
the
way
set.
That I wanted to go, right? And so, yeah, but absolutely, he's still got a story that he can tell as an unseeded player that said I was on the cusp of beating Roger Federer until I got hurt.
It's just such a bummer.
And can easily say, hey, I would have beat him. Come on. I would have won that.
We'll never know. It's such a bummer for fans, though. You're watching this. Well, first of all, you're getting excited about Serena, and it happens at the very beginning of the match. At least the Federer match, you get four sets. But then you get four sets, and all of a sudden, the guy, he doesn't give up. He's hurt. He had to retire, which means he technically gave up, but not in the other way. And you're sitting there like, man, you're all excited about a fifth set. I mean, imagine all the people there at Wimbledon all excited about a fifth set, and all of a sudden, Federer wins by default. That's not good for the sport. Not good at all.
No. I mean, the women's part's worse.
Much
you
worse.
Well,
if Federer would have been the guy that
got
hurt.
That's what I'm saying, is because Federer moved on.
Right.
Like, if it was Federer, obviously, it would be the same issue, right? It'd be the exact same thing.
Right.
But Federer won.
Two older players getting hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Federer won, so their cash cow's still there, right, basically.
But that could happen to him next match.
Not. Yeah, exactly. It could happen to anybody.
Djokovic or whoever. Yeah. Memphis coach Penny Hardaway announced yesterday he's going to stay at the University of Memphis. He'd been interviewed by the Orlando Magic. Why would I bring this up? He's now named an assistant coach to add to his staff. You know who that is?
I did see that, yeah.
That is Larry Brown, who coached KU to national title. He is 80, and he's going to be assistant coach. He hasn't coached since 2016 as SMU. Larry Brown, I guess coming out of retirement, being an assistant coach at the age of 80. Larry Brown is a brilliant coaching mind. There's no doubt about it. But I'm going to tell you something. Every time I see Larry Brown associated with college basketball teams, like helping or coaching, I'm waiting for probation.
Yeah.
And that might be unfair, but I don't know why Larry Brown gets to skate so much. Like, he just gets off with a free pass. Like, at KU, he won a national title, and he departed for a whole bunch of money, and they got placed on probation.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Williams' first year, he had Adonis Jordan, and KU somehow won 19 games that year, 19-12. They couldn't defend their title. Larry, Danny and the Miracles won at 88. Larry was gone the next year, and he went on the greener pastures. Larry Brown at SMU, 2016. There were problems at SMU as well with recruiting and violations and whatever. And so we go all nuts and on top of other guys that do these really bad things. And Kelvin Sampson gets knocked out of college basketball for a while because of texts. And Larry Brown just seems to have nine lives. Like, I'm not saying Larry Brown's not a great coach. He is. If you just leave it to X's and O's, Larry Brown's probably one of the best of all time. And he's respected, and I get it, and I respect him too. But it should be pointed out, Larry Brown is far from being clean, okay? So it is weird. I'm like, you're going to bring in a guy that's been at two different institutions that have had all kinds of problems because of when he was there, and you consider and go, well, Larry didn't actually do it. Hey, you're the head coach. You're the CEO of the company. You don't know what's happening with your employees underneath you. That's lack of institutional control, as they call it. Hello, that's a pretty popular term now, isn't it? I'm sitting here going, Memphis has had problems. John Calipari vacated their Final Four national championship appearance because of John Calipari. Mm-hmm. You have Penny Hardaway, who knows if he's doing things on the right way or not. I don't know if Larry Brown coming in as a coach, that helps. But in the other regards, does it hurt? Can it get you in trouble again? It's amazing to me how it's just like Larry Brown has never done anything wrong.
Yeah.
Come on, man. He's a smart dude. He knew he skirted some rules and did this and did that. I'm not saying he's the only one, but I just find it weird that nobody brings this up at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it because he's 80 now?
Because he's 80 and he can't do anything wrong?
Like, I think that's probably part of it, as long as he's been in it.
When he went to SMU, it was kind of like nobody cared.
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting.
He's 70 then, too. So
yeah, at the end he's 70.
So what's the – I don't know what the age cutoff is for that, right?
I don't know.
But I mean, there's certain people in life that get those extra opportunities, and nobody really even bats an eye, right? They don't even say anything about it. It's like, okay, well, Larry's going here now. And John Calipari is obviously part of that list, too. And it's like, okay, well, they did all these things wrong, but it doesn't matter.
Well, there's an article in 2015, this is by USA Today. Larry Brown, this is 2015, Larry Brown must go for good after third NCAA strike, okay? He's won an NCAA championship, he's won an NBA title, he's 1,500-plus career victories, he's won 60% of his games, but as this article said, and this is 2015, all three of his stops as a college coach, Brown's programs have been hit hard by NCAA violations. Brown says, I have nothing to be ashamed of in any of those cases. It happened at KU, and then, of course, SMU was the most recent when he was head coach. The NCAA suspended him and banned SMU from the postseason for multiple infractions, including academic fraud and unethical conduct. And that was his last head coaching job. He had, if you don't remember, here's something I forgot. As this article says, as a result of misdeeds under Brown's watch, UCLA had to vacate its 1980 Final Four appearance when Brown was a head coach. One of only 11 teams to endure such embarrassment. Of course, as we know, KU won in 88. And then, of course, what happened? 89 on probation. And then they had suspensions and academic issues there at SMU. So this is a very strong article. It was written by Nancy Armour of USA Today 6 years ago when Larry Brown was 74, saying, in college, everywhere he goes, bad things happen after the fact. He might win games, he might even win championships, but there's a price to pay. That's why I don't know maybe it's no big deal since he's an assistant. But I still, I would be leery. A lot of people are like, oh, my God, Memphis is so excited to get Larry Brown. And my first reaction was, be careful.
I mean, the only way you can work that around, right, is say, hey, you're 80. We just want your mind. We don't want you to recruit. We don't want you
to stay away from everything else.
All you're doing is helping me coach, right?
Yeah, right.
Just the X's and O's. You're not going to be part of anything else. And who knows? Maybe that's a setup. I don't know. I think that would be the setup if I was coaching Memphis.
Right.
Right. So I would be like, hey, I don't want any of this shady stuff to come into the program.
Even Dick Vitale said back in 2015, Larry Brown had problems at Kansas, UCLA, now SMU. How in the world is he allowed to coach this season? SMU knew about the two strikes and still hired him. Why? Because he can win. Why does Memphis bring him in? Do they really need to have Larry Brown to get over the next hurdle and be a NCAA title contender? Apparently they must feel that he's going to help them in a big way. Let's just see if they have to vacate anything later on, or that they're going to have some kind of violations. Perhaps it's different, as you just said, because of an assistant. But it is sometimes amazing how we gloss over some of this stuff. Because it's not like it happened once with Larry Brown. That's three documented situations. Yeah. At every one of his college jobs, he's had issues with the NCAA.
Yeah.
Hello. And, oh, by the way, I'll get to that in a moment. NHL Game 2, Stanley Cup Finals tonight, Montreal at Tampa Bay, 7 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Tampa Bay's up 1-0. And speaking of society giving people second chances, Mike Tyson's birthday today. He is 55. A lot of people didn't think he would ever live to be 55. I know I didn't. And after he bit off a piece of Evander Holyfield's ear, you figured he'd never get the box again, and he would just, you know, that would be it. That would just put the final nail in the coffin for Mike Tyson, right? I don't know if you saw the documentary series. It was a two-part series on ABC recently with Mike Tyson. It was very, very interesting. I highly recommend that you go back and watch it. But one thing that is very interesting is, and you're going to have to give me an example because I can't come up with one. Here's how unique and odd Mike Tyson is, and society has embraced it. Mike Tyson is 55. He's on social media. He's done exhibition boxing matches. People still want his autographs. He warms up overweight in a boxing ring in Vegas, and people are wanting his trousers and his sweatshirt and sweaty shirt. It's like he's still the heavyweight champion of the world, and he isn't. And what's amazing to me is this. And you tell me if you can come up with another example. When it comes to sports, maybe in entertainment as a whole, it's happened. Does anybody remember he went to prison for rape? He was convicted of rape, raping an 18-year-old beauty pageant contestant. He served, what was it, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it was. I forgot how much time he served specifically. I think it was almost 3 years. He went to prison. He was convicted. It was not overturned. It's permanent on his record. He served his time, which kudos to him. And I totally am cool with the guy getting a second chance. We all make mistakes, some worse than others. I'm not against second chances. What I don't understand is that's how unique Mike Tyson is. He's got a face tattoo, for crying out loud. And I find Mike Tyson interesting. I do. I like to listen to him. I like to hear what he has to say. Sometimes it says stuff that's just crazy and nuts, and that's maybe why he appeals to me. And maybe that's why I'm answering my own question. I don't even realize it. But what other sports celebrity or athlete has gone to prison for rape or murder or whatever and been widely accepted in society as just hey, this is all great. Mike Tyson's on this show. He's in a movie called The Hangover. Like, for instance, O.J. Simpson was not convicted of murdering his wife, ex-wife. Now, we all believe he did. And you know what? He ain't thought of highly too well at all in this society, right?
Yeah, no.
Mike Tyson was convicted of rape and went to prison for it and was an 18-year-old beauty pageant contestant. And yet, Mike Tyson's starring in movies. He's doing TikTok stuff. He's doing social media stuff. He's being on podcasts left and right. He's on documentary series ABC has. And people still fawn over the guy. And he raped somebody and went to prison for 3 years. And it's like society doesn't care. I can't think of any other athlete that's been given that opportunity. And I'm not saying Mike Tyson doesn't deserve the opportunity. It's just that if this happens to other people, other sports stars, it ruins them. And they'll never get back to having anything. They'll basically want to go in a hole in the ground. And that isn't the case of Mike Tyson. That's how unique he is.
Yeah.
And in a good or bad way.
Yeah. And I think there's still probably people that are not big fans of him for that. But sure.
And I respect
it's
that.
I guess the only name that comes to mind that I could compare, and it's obviously a different legal situation, but Mike Vick, right?
Yeah.
Like, he got his opportunity to come back. He was a pro bowler, and a lot of people were mad about that. But I don't think people gravitate towards Mike Vick like they do Mike Tyson.
Oh, there's no way.
Right?
There's no way.
Like, he got the opportunity, and he was loved at the time when he was a pro bowler. And you know, I read his book, you watched the documentary, and he did his time and came back. And there was a peak of people that were like, you know, he did his time. He deserves to come back, and became Mike Vick fans again. But I don't think today that they would.
No.
But that's the only name that really comes to my mind.
You don't see Mike Vick in movies. You don't see him doing all this other stuff that Mike Tyson's doing.
No.
There's no docuseries on Vick after.
A different path after it was done. And obviously changed his life.
Sure,
like, there's no question that the man changed his life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can't think of anything else in sports, right? Like, there's a couple of names that came to my mind in entertainment, that have done it. And I think it's a more forgiving industry,
I think,
entertainment, because you are being entertained. you know, just with people that have been in prison and have come back and then gravitated, and people know, like Robert Downey Jr. was a name that came to my mind right away. Yeah. Becomes Iron Man after all that. You know, Tupac was a guy that came to my mind, and I think a lot of the love that they have for him is because he died, right? And so it's a bigger than life situation there, but I can't think of another athlete like that.
You know, Kobe's situation in Colorado, had that turned to end up being much worse, and had he had to go to prison and was convicted of something, he wouldn't have recovered from that. He wouldn't have, not in society's eyes, I don't think. But Mike Tyson, and maybe it's because he was an individual sport compared to a team sport. Maybe that's
I was thinking
part of the
Tiger
equation.
Woods. You know, like Tiger's gone through a lot of things, and nobody's really like people leave him for a little bit, but they still have.
Yeah,
that love for him, right?
Right.
Because in my mind, like
he didn't
still
commit a crime. He didn't commit a
crime.
But
the crimes weren't there.
He didn't go to prison.
So I'm in my mind. I was like, could Tiger Woods recover from that? Right? Like he has recovered from a lot of other issues that he's had.
I don't know. I have my doubts on that one.
Yeah.
That's
a what if situation there, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
If it got so far where he ended up in prison and.
Yeah. Because the reason I bring that up is we were talking about Larry Brown and how people tend to just sweep under the rug his problems at every university he's been at. And they're all excited about him being an assistant coach at Memphis at the age of 80. I'm like, hello, he has skeletons in the closet.
Yeah.
And then the people talk about Mike Tyson, some of the young people don't even know he went to jail for rape.
Oh, no, they have no idea.
And just because you don't know doesn't mean you shouldn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that type of thing. Because then you come across as uneducated when you go around bragging about how great Mike Tyson is. And you're like, yeah, the guy that raped somebody and went to prison for 3 years? What a great guy. Now, he seems like he's changed his life and he's better for it. And like I said, I'm okay with second chances, but it is just crazy how he's been able to brush that off. I know he didn't brush it off, but in regards to the way you look at it from a society standpoint, when he is in the movie The Hangover, which was great for him, and he's doing exhibition matches and people are paying to watch, and there's still this drawing in of Mike Tyson, you're drawn to Mike Tyson, and we somehow, most people, you think much worse of if they went to jail for convicted rape for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And Mike Tyson, it seems to just kind of slide off of him somehow. So I bring it up because we talk about Larry Brown, previous situations. And Mike Tyson is 55, and I have to admit, if you had bet back when he bit off Evander Holyfield's ear in a boxing match, if you bet then that Mike Tyson lived to be 55, I don't know if you had a lot of takers.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.